and it went like. Hi everybody, this is Patty Toledo and we're back with Buo's Games Grindset Episode 3. Woohoo! Like little by little, it's getting there. And today I'm gonna break a little bit because I know we talked about visual arts first and we talked about programming last week. This week, I know you're asking like it should be design and production. Nope, the week after. I wanted to have a jump because I think a lot of the things that we talked in the previous weeks were about what is the career, the things that the parents worry, the things that the students worry on where they're going to get. So we have a very special guest today that is Neville, and I will not butcher your surname again. You're going to tell it because I'm getting really good in butchering people's names. But Neville specifically, besides being a cool visual artist, he also manages the Ear 4. But I will let you talk more. Neville, please introduce yourself.
Hi, Patty. Nice to be here, and thank you for having me. I do have an extremely difficult last name. It's pronounced Marcinkowski. I got it because of my Polish roots. So, yeah, thanks for having me.
You're super welcome. So, please introduce yourself. What do you do? What did you do before everything?
Okay. Well, basically, like you already said, like I'm a visual artist. I've been teaching at Buas now for 16 years. Before that, I worked in a multitude of companies as a visual artist. I started basically as a 3D animator. No, not as a 3D animator, as a 2D animator. As a matter of fact, I was schooled in a traditional 2D animation. I did the whole era of cell animation and white gloves on cellophane. So I'm really old school. Then I switched to 3D animation. I worked at several companies in which I did concept art. I learned how to model. I did texturing. I did video editing. I did some art direction. So all that before I got the opportunity to basically teach, which I did not want to do at first. But then I tried it, and it is also a very rewarding thing to do. So, and that's how I ended up at Buas.
Curiosity, why you didn't want to teach before?
I think the simple thought of standing in front of a bunch of people.
Like, nerve-wracking.
Yeah, it's like nerve-wracking. You're like in front of like, when I first, like at the point where I was asked to do it, like a friend of mine, which used to be a colleague, asked like, do you want to be a teacher? And I was like, no, hell no. I'm not going to be in front of like 60, 70 people showing all the mistakes you make. And then I tried it. And basically while doing it, I did shit my pants. Pardon my French. And I was super nervous. And the thing that I prepared to teach was basically enough content to teach for 10 weeks. And afterwards, I got really good reviews by the students. And they, although I thought I was really, really nervous, they said that it wasn't showing. And I also learned that it is not, there's nothing wrong with making mistakes. And it's even better to make mistakes in front of students because then you can show them how to fix mistakes. So, and yeah, I can recommend it to everyone. Teaching is really rewarding, and it creates a really nice atmosphere. Yeah.
Nice. So, and what do you do at Buas now?
At Buas, currently I am the Year 4 coordinator and a placement coordinator. So basically I make sure that our graduating students know what to do, know where to go. I link them up with supervising lecturers. I make sure that basically I take away all the hurdles that are present in guiding them from education to industry.
Nice.
Yeah.
And that's why I brought you as well, because one of the recurring questions that have been in the other episodes is also we see it in the open day and we see from the students and the parents is, what happened after I graduate? What future will I have? Where will I go? I think the difference goes quite big between what the students say and what the parents say. The students, I think, are more focused on, can I get to the biggest company that I always dreamed of? And for the parents is, what happens if they are not really good? What happens if they don't get into the biggest companies? Mm-hmm. So let's divide it in two parts. So from the point of view of the students, in your experience, what do they expect? What should they expect? How does it work?
Mm-hmm. That's a very interesting question. I think a good thing about studying at BUAS is we do a big effort in preparing the students to be as ready as possible for the industry. So I think that's also a point at which we differ a lot from other universities, is our industry approach. So basically we teach the students as if they would be in industry, right? So we mimic as much as possible game projects, the way they are ran in the industry, with as a result that by the time that the students go on internship, they are so used to following the pipeline that they just follow along. They make a flying start, basically. And that's also one of the major feedbacks that we get from a lot of companies, and that is specifically our students. They don't need a lot of explanation when they start running with the project that the company is currently doing, because they know the tricks. So I think I'm diverting a little bit from your question. So from a student point of view, what can they expect? I think given the status of the industry at this point, it's very hard. It became more difficult for students to find a job in the game industry. But having said that, I think students should also be ready to open up their view, to broaden their view, because there's so many other industries in which all the skills that we teach them are definitely wanted. I know of specific, for example, to give an example, there's companies that that create stage props for concerts. And I'm going to name like a very cool company that we have here in Holland, which is called Leisure Expert Group, which design and create and build stage props for concerts all over the world. Not only for concerts, but also they do the same thing for theme parks. And it's a really exciting job, and it's a really cool and rewarding way to earn your money by doing that. So, and it requires the same skill you get taught here at BUAS. Not only that, there's also like a whole bunch of more serious industries, for example, the medical industry, or for example, the automotive industry, in which like almost everyone at this point is using Unreal to simulate situations. We have several alumni also working in industries like that. And I think it's time to broaden your view and to not only focus on games, because there's so much more out there.
I love that. Without for people listening, we did not rehearse this. Neville does not know what was talked in the episodes before, because we are recording. So it's really interesting that even though there isn't a direct discussion, all the lecturers are saying the same thing.
Oh, okay. Maybe repeating stuff that
no,
has been said last time.
It's actually brilliant, because it means that we have all the same mindset, and we are all pushing for the same thing from different perspectives. Like last week, Dave DeBrock was here, and he was talking how he started his career in the automotive and then went to games, because if you know Unreal, you can work in that without any problem. So it's interesting to see, and this is from a programmer point of view, and still in visual art you have exactly the same possibilities. True. So it's really, and it will happen the same with designers and producers. So it's super interesting to see how they go. And I also think that makes it easier for the parents to also to understand how rich the games industry is. Because their fear is entertainment gaming enough? Because People that are not in the industry don't usually know how much money is in it or how popular things are, but they know other areas. But because now everything is game technology, it makes so much easier for the parents also to support more.
True. Yeah. I think that's also something that like a lot of our teachers and also you in presentations on Open Day say, the fact that like games industry is way bigger than film industry. But even to elaborate a little bit on that, like my wife is in film industry, and more and more the making of films is also using game technology. I recently talked to a friend of mine who created a short movie, and at first they wanted to shoot it live, and then it turned out that that it was way more efficient to do it in 3D and use Unreal. So even if you and that again ties in with what I said about broadening your view, even if you want to do if you pursue a career in movies, you will also benefit from the stuff you learn to make games.
And you talked a little bit about the current state of the industry. What is your point of view about that? And bear in mind here, people listening, these are all point of views. We are not the guides and the Bibles of the industry. We are part of it. And the same way that it happens in other industries, we have kind of a good overview of what is happening. We do not have all the decisions in mind, but because you are connecting with the industry all the time, in all fairness, we all are, but I think you are the forefront with the students towards the industry. How do you see the industry now? Could you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Sure. I think every industry has its ups and downs, and okay, games industry is part of entertainment industry. It's quite obvious that in time of COVID, a lot of people were playing games because there was not much else to do. So there was a huge boom in the game industry, which now is changing again. The fact of the matter is, entertainment is always going to be needed. So it's never going to go away. So the game industry will recover from this, and it will change itself, and there will always be different ways of expressing ideas with games, with different software, which is another level at which game industry constantly changes. There's constantly new software that that is being used. Things evolve. AI is finding its place also. Another thing that I think you should not be afraid of, it's just another tool that you can use to create better games. So, I don't know if that answers the question.
No, it absolutely does. You're just opening more questions that I want to ask now. But before we go there, I just wanted to add also that people forget how much it changes. I was actually reflecting on that yesterday and saying, well, if you think that, well, in all fairness, Neville and I are both not babies. We're young still, but not babies. And if you think that 20 years ago, we still had flop discs. Mm-hmm. We still had CD-ROMs. Nowadays, you cannot even get a computer with a CD-ROM. When I started, when we had the first games, when I was a teenager, I am older, we still had to go to the shop and buy a box. It wasn't download.
There was no internet.
There was no internet. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Internet was only in the university in the libraries.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But look how fast it changed. How fast it changed. We're not talking last century. We're not talking hundreds of years. No, we're talking the same lifetime. In my lifetime alone, I saw from having nothing, not having cell phone, not having computer, to having it all and discussing, oh my God, this computer is to have more than a kilo and a half. I don't want to carry it. How bizarre that is. So the games industry happens the same way. In the 80s, you had consoles with the little cartridge and everything. And people thought in the 80s that the games industry was going to die again. There was a saying of the games industry is dead. The games industry will never be dead because people forget that people have been playing games since they were in the caves. Making games and playing with each other is part of what human beings do. So our job will never change. What will change, though, is the nature of the job and how we execute that job and what we need to learn to do that job, which comes to the next question I wanted to... I talk too much and you are the guest, but I wanted to ask something else, which is, what are the main skills and that you think, that you see from people going in the industry that they need to do? Like, what... You have been... How long have you been here in Buas, Neville?
I've been in Buas... This is my 16th year.
Okay, yep. So 16 yep. years. Yep. You have seen the industry changing mm-hmm. quite a lot. All mm-hmm. those that I'm saying, you have seen most of it. How did the skills change that the industry needed 15 years ago and that needed now? Some things never change. Artists still need to draw, still need to be creative. Programmers need to know programming. Like, the tool change, maybe Unreal wasn't that popular. But what are the main skills that you feel like, no, this changed completely?
I think I'm going to start answering that question with something that does not change. And I think that is crucial for any game developer to have. And that is, I think one of the most important things that anyone creating a game should have is, you should be ready to take ownership, right? You should be ready to take responsibility. So basically, creating a game is not something you do because it's a job. Creating a game is something you do because you simply love creating games. You love creating art or design or code to make it all work out. So somehow it is a passion project, right? And that will never change, whether it is all the tools that change, whether AI comes in place, whether it's a racing game or whether it's a movie or whether it's a comic that you create, that property will remain the same. I think the one thing that is really important, and that's another thing that did not change, you should always be open to learn new things, because what does change is the software that you use to create the game. It changes at an astonishing rate, right? So stuff that was hot 5 years ago is like outdated today. So looking at, for example, things like Substance Design or Substance Painter, if you're a texturer, you need to know these things. You can't just get away with just knowing Photoshop these days. So you should always be prepared to learn new stuff. When you create games, learning never stops. That's one thing. One thing that I see, and that is, in my opinion, changed with the current state of the industry, I think you should not be a one-trick pony. And that is something that I say out of my own experience. I've never worked at really big companies, so it played always in my advantage that I knew a lot of stuff. So I know a little bit of animation, I know a little bit of rigging, I know a little bit of texturing, I know a little bit of modeling, I can do concept art. And if you know a lot of things, then you will be able to take a lot of jobs. And especially, coming again to the current state of the industry, it's better to know a lot because you will be a more polyvalent asset. Whether if you are just a specialist, if you only know concept art, it's very expensive to make a game. So they will only need you at the beginning of the project. If as a concept artist, you also know 3D, well, then you can also move into the production phase and help with that. And not only will knowing 3D guarantee your job, it will also help you being a better concept artist, because you can sculpt and you can create concepts using ZBrush rather than just drawing stuff. So
especially when you are a junior, I think there is a certain point in the career when you are a senior and you have been doing things forever And then maybe you will work in a really big company where you're constantly being the concept artist, like using the concept artist as an example. Mm-hmm. You're constantly doing different things for different projects, for marketing, for something else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But when you are your first absolute job, you will never be an specialist. You can go look in LinkedIn, go look in all the job posts. You will never see an absolute beginner character artist or absolute beginner VFX specialist. Like the beginner and specialist don't work well mm-hmm. together.
True.
You will have internship in certain areas,
mm-hmm.
but the fact that you know a lot of things allows you to be an intern in any of the areas that you want to do.
Yeah,
right?
Very true. Yeah, yeah. But also, when you see a lot of layoffs in the big companies, you should also look at what else is happening. And there's a lot of small indie companies that do exist with not many people, which create really cool stuff.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, and they require more generalists than specialists.
Yeah, because indie developers cannot hire one artist for each one of the talk. They will have 2-3 artists that will do everything.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think I would add that to as well. I think you said it, that people are always learning, but I also would add, and I added that in other episodes as well, proactivity, being extremely proactive. The case of the crisis make the game companies want to hire professionals that are go-getters,
mm-hmm.
that are really already looking for ways to improve the pipeline, even the bigger companies.
I agree.
They don't want people anymore that sit down
exactly.
and then just do the task that is asked.
Yeah. I totally agree. And that ties in with what I said about taking ownership. It's not you working for a company. The game is also yours. Like you need to want to do it. And the success of what you do ties in with the success of the game in the end.
How is the process for people? I think a lot of people think, okay, I will do the university. They start the career. They here at Buas, they will do the third year with the project. But a lot of times when they start, they don't really know what happens after the third year. What should they expect?
I think it really depends on the student. There's a bunch of students that, and maybe I should also mention that year three prepares them really well for industry, because they basically work for half a year on a game project as they would work on it in a real company. So by the time they get to year four, they are technically ready for the industry. And a lot of them, they take that chance and they jump into what is out there, and they want to cooperate on big projects, and they do, and they do it really successfully. But there's also, I would say, another percentage of students that that realizes that this will probably the last time they can really spend 20 weeks or even longer on laying their own creative egg, right? Because afterwards, when they graduate, when they get their diploma, when they get to the real job, they will work 9-to-5, they will probably get married, they will get kids, and there will be no time anymore to do their own thing. So we are also very happy that we have those students, because they create all the beautiful material that we can use to advertise our school.
And also a lot of the students in the fourth year that do the projects, they start their own companies as well.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah,
because the quality that they have, I think one thing that differentiates Buas a lot from the other universities is that, you will have pretty much every game development university will create good indie developers, but we create indie developers on a AAA quality of work, which I think it's quite unique,
mm-hmm.
especially nowadays that's possible, right?
I agree. Yeah. If you look like teams like Dark Side of the Moon and also Verdant last year, they're creating beautiful, beautiful games that that do not have to shy away for big titles. So yeah, I think we can be proud of that.
Yeah, I agree.
And even like even more like those companies that basically are built by alumni, by BUAS alumni, they in turn hire interns from BUAS. So it's a
cycle.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, and hopefully the BUAS game the BUAS will help the Breda game scene grow and grow more, because although a lot of our students go to really big companies, one of our dreams is to actually have the big companies coming from the students and becoming the next Larian, becoming the next. Well, we say Larian because Larian was an indie someday. You didn't know that.
It was. I worked at Larian a long time ago when they were still an indie.
It's scary to see how much they grew, isn't it?
Yes, it's incredible.
Amazing, it's incredible. As well. So you see the end of the whole process for the students. So for the people that are now, the applications are open, they can go and join. I think they have a lot of fear and expectation and dreams. What is your advice for them? Because you see the end of it. Like you see the other side of this rainbow. So what would you advise the people that are home and thinking how to join?
You mean people that want to join BUAS to learn how to make games?
Yeah. And also, of course, this is a BUAS podcast, so of course, join BUAS. But in general, how would you advise people that are thinking, I want to be a game developer? So let's make it more open. So people are there, or they are playing at home, or they like esports, or they just like playing games, or they try different things, but they are still kind of, I don't know if I want to have a career in this. Mm-hmm. What would be your advice for them if they want to start a career in game development?
I think
hopefully come here, but yeah.
They should, of course, come here. I think one thing that they definitely should realize is that there's a whole big difference between playing games and making games. And I think, like I mentioned in the beginning, I think making games, it's a passion, right? It's not something you do because your parents tell you like, hey, I think it's good to go into the game industry because there is a lot of money to make. Of course, it's nice that you can make money with it, but it's even nicer that you can make money with the thing that you love doing the most. And basically, it should be the thing that you love doing the most. And that's basically advice for any job. You should only do the job because you really love doing it.
Yeah, but it's true, because you can make money. You can make a lot of money, and you can make more money in other careers than games. But yeah, that's a good advice to say is, if you go into a job just because of money, don't.
No.
Yeah. Don't, because it's unbearable.
Exactly.
Money takes you only that far.
And you will not create a quality project. You can only, in my point of view, create a quality project if you can put your heart in it, whatever that is, whether you are a baker making bread, whether you are a cook making a meal, whether you are a car mechanic repairing cars. Like, without the love for cars, you will not be a good car mechanic. And the same goes for games. Having said that, it's not easy to make games, and that's also why
nothing good and worth making is easy.
Exactly. Yeah, it takes effort. It takes a lot of effort, and it takes you to want to practice a lot and to train your skill, basically, which goes for any skill you want to master. I think another thing that you will really need as a game development is not something you do on your own, right? So you're not in your own. Basically, you could create a game on your own alone, but the better games and the cooler games and the games where the magic appears are made with a team of people. So I think to be able to be a good game developer, you need to be like people, right? So you need to be together with people, talk to people, show each other the work you do. I also keep telling my students, like, never compare yourself to another artist. Don't try to be better than that other artist. Look at the work of another artist to get inspired, basically.
And yeah, be better than yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Be better than yourself, the version of yourself you were yesterday. And if that is happening, then you're doing a good job.
Yeah, that's a good advice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think also be open-minded, but not only in the sense of I'm open-minded, that be like just by saying, be really open-minded, be really curious, really interested, really want to know more. I think curiosity is what makes creativity.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better. So yeah, definitely. If you want to be a game developer, you need to get out in the world, not stay behind your computer. You need to look at comics, go to museums, go to concerts, travel, look at all the little details that are out there in the world and that can inspire you. So if you feel like, hey, that's the kind of person I am, I already do those things, then you might have it in you to become a good game developer.
And I would also say, if you're not quite there, but you have the drive to do it, because I think a lot of people, they don't naturally have everything. They might be shy, or it's fine. Like your quirks and your differences are welcome, because I have been telling that in several episodes. The games industry should be more inclusive, and it's our job to make it more inclusive by putting all these spices together, right? But also, as if you're not quite there, okay, but you don't need to be quite there. We are here exactly to get you there. You need to have the will for it. You need to have this true desire on becoming that, because then we can drive you to that. You can learn things. Everything can be learned. But if you don't want to learn, then there is very little that anybody can do, right?
Yeah, I agree. And especially what you say about some people might be shy. Some people might not want to be in the spotlight. But you don't have to be in the spotlight, because the game is in the spotlight, right? And you can shine through the game. And that's where that's what is really the magic of creating a game. And it's the same as if you would create a movie, the same thing happens. The magic appears because, like, everyone that is in this team contributes in his or her little way. And in the end, the end result is something bigger than the sum of all the parts. And that's where it's like really like, I get goosebumps while I say this. That's where it's, making stuff together is the most beautiful thing that can happen to you. And it's super rewarding.
That's very true. Neville, thank you so much. This was amazing. Guys, I hope you guys enjoyed as much as I did. Before we go, I wanted to have one last, it's not a question, it's more of a comment that I wanted to discuss, because you were saying you shine through the game, and that's true. But I thought it was interesting. A lot of people don't realize that most of the most successful games out there, people don't know how many people are behind it, who were behind it. You might know the name of the company, or you can go and look for people in the credits, but it's a place where, because in films you still have the actors in front, in music you still have the artists on stage. Games is one place where the art really shines through, and I think that's an amazing thing. It makes it more unique than it already is, right?
Yes, that's maybe where games are different than anything else. So I totally agree.
And more inviting as well, because I think it brings more people together that just want to do beautiful things, and that's it.
Yeah, it creates amazing experiences. Yeah, cool. Totally.
Thank you very much, Neville. This was amazing.
Thank you for having me.
See you guys next week. Thank you. And then it went like...